So, for those who don't know me, I'm Dwight Gledhill. I'm the Deputy Director of NOAA's Ocean Acidification Program. I was formerly in another life a geochemist. Back in the day when ocean acidification was purely occupied by geochemists, and then we invited the biologists in, and now we're in the minority. But that's okay. So, the Ocean Acidification Program is pretty new, and it's tiny but mighty. The entire staff is Libby Jewett, who you can't be now, she's out in Geneva right now, at the Global Earth Observing Meeting, talking about acidification in Geneva. So she sent me along as a surrogate bank. Jennifer Burnett works down actually in South Carolina. She handles all our education outreach. And Shelly Bush is now on board with us. She was with the Northwest Fishery Science Center. And we have Erica, who's a Knoss Fellow, who we're about to lose. And how many of us are Knoss Fellows? But the actual Ocean Acidification Program is not in staff, the headquarters that sort of shuffle all things along. It's the 55 or more projects that we invest in across the agency. Okay, we're housed within the Office of Ocean and Atmospheric Research, which is supposed to be the research arm of NOAA. But in fact, we recognize that there is the expertise across the agency. And to be addressing ocean acidification, which is highly multidisciplinary, we invest across the whole agency. So, next slide, following photos. All right, so where we came from, back in 2009, we actually had legislation passed, the Federal Ocean Acidification Research and Monitoring Act, reform. And it had very specific requirements to several agencies, specifically to NSF, to NASA, and to NOAA. Okay? And the instructions were really to be directed by a strategic research plan forged by an interagency working group. That interagency working group comprises NOAA, NSF, USGS, NASA, Fish and Wildlife Service, EPM, EPA, BOEM, and Department of State. All of them are members of the IWG. They only recently completed this strategic plan. Okay, it's been a long time in the making, and it is almost about to be released. So I'm going to show you a draft document that may go on to be drafted as of later this afternoon. Okay, but this is what guides our strategies at the federal level. All of the agencies engaged in ocean acidification are guided by this document, which you can't read. Don't try it. But the research goals that are highlighted here are quite extensive. All right, we have to look at ocean acidification across the entire globe, including within our coastal domains, and inside, and particularly looking at the effects on sustenance and economic impacts, which really moves us into the coastal zone. On a limited fiscal budget, it is critical that we work very closely through organizations like NECAN and you guys to try to figure out ways of partitioning the responsibilities at the state level and the federal level, because we do not have the resources to cover all the bases, any one of us. And so it's important that we're going to have a really good coordinated strategy to make the most of whatever resources we invest. Okay? So just to give you a little taste of NOAA's specific operation, our ocean acidification program is carried out by multiple fishery science laboratories located in the Northeast, at Standing Hook, New Jersey, also Milford, Connecticut, out of Narragansett. We have another fishery science center, Northwest Fishery Science Center, which does an awful lot. In fact, Shannon was part of that. It's probably one of the most sophisticated systems that we have for doing manipulative studies on biology. Somebody had asked if there was any way of doing diurnal variations within the experimental tanks. Northwest Fishery Science Center actually can do that now. We also have an Alaska Fishery Science Center doing an awful lot of experimentation. Our analytical labs are AOML down in Florida, that handles the entirety of all the Atlantic Ocean, and PMEO, which handles all the Pacific and much of the Indian Ocean. We have activities going on out of the Pacific Islands, to the Pacific Island Fishery Science Center, where they're doing all kinds of ecological assessments and surveys. We are not entirely in-house In fact, if you count the beans, which I do on a daily basis, I find that 50% of all the resources that come into NOAA for the Ocean Certification Program exit one way or another out to the academic community, which I think is actually a good thing. Okay, because many of the best expertise that we have is actually housed at the academic institutions. So between our competitive grants, our cooperative institutes, and working through IUS, we're able to actually bring on academic researchers. And that's how it's possible. So in terms of the biological response studies, these were initiated early on as sort of an addendum to existing experimental studies that were going on. This is particularly true for the Northeast Fisheries Science Center. So when they started experiments on ocean acidification, they began working with the organisms they were working with previously for other reasons. This is why we do not, right now, have lobster on that list. Okay? We are entering our next cycle. We found out of our program in 3-year cycles. Someone, I got 30 seconds left. That's great.
So I want to hear all about your funding for lobsters. I'm going to keep
it. I know, stop there. So we funded 3-year cycles. We're now coming to the conclusion of our first 3-year cycle. Our second year cycle, we are actively engaging heavily with the folks in the Northeast Fisheries Science Center to figure out how we can change our portfolio of experiments to better fulfill and meet the requirements that folks in the Northeast are wanting to address. And we believe they have the capabilities to do that or to engage with their academic researchers in the Northeast to make that happen. So we also invest a fair amount of our portfolio in actual observing the geochemistry. Okay, we do that through dedicated ship cruises where they go through and do full hydrographic surveys of the geochemistry down to the bottom. These are limited in time, but cover the full West Coast and the East Coast, the Gulf of Mexico, portions of Alaska. So spatially, they're quite broad. They tend to be up on the shelves. In fact, some of them actually, I believe, ventures into the Gulf of Maine, not the second time they did it.
Yeah.
It does go all the way to the Gulf of Maine. So we do go into the Gulf of Maine, but we don't drive up into the Downers-Scott River. We don't do that. We also have quite an array of fixed autonomous observing systems deployed in various locations. We tend to focus our priorities in the coastal zones where the ecosystems are most relevant to us. This is where we differentiate our funding investments between us and the Climate Program Office. The Climate Program Office, which were the folks responsible for putting ocean acidification on the map, I might add, because they were charged with quantifying the carbon inventories of the planet. And their oceanic cruises that they've been doing through repeat hydrography quantify the uptake of anthropogenic CO2. Okay? But they didn't want to get into the coastal zone because it was way too messy, okay, to deal with. 1 minute. So that we're trying to cover that base, and we're coordinating ourselves very closely with the Climate Program Office so we're not being duplicative in our investments. Okay. We are also coordinating internationally through what we call the Global Ocean Acidification Observing Network, or GOAN. So we recently had a workshop in St. Andrews, Scotland, where we had 62 scientists from 23 countries, with the primary objective of trying to come up with a unified protocol for observing ocean acidification that incorporates not just the geochemistry, but the biology and ecological responses as well. So, not only do we do monitoring and biological research, we also are in charge of handling all the data management and synthesis, okay, across our agency. We have some competitive modeling investments going on. We are interested, and we work very, many of the scientists that were on the, I'll talk louder because I know I'm not running out of time, but many of the scientists that were involved on the Blue Ribbon panel were in fact working out of PMEL and like Challenge on Northwest Fisheries Science Center. So, and we are pushing heavily towards education outreach. So I think I'm going to probably stop there because I'm out of time.
Okay, so anybody have questions to start with for Dwight or Kathy or Representative Devin? And then we're going to get Jay back on the line. He's hearing us but not talking to us right now. So any questions for the panelists? Richard.
Yeah,
Well, I'd like to know, as someone who's involved a little bit in ocean planning processes and the future, is there a way that we can, any of these commissions or something, can come up with more of the public and the planners, what efforts to reduce carbon, say, let's say, renewable energy projects, is there a way to come up with cold hard facts and figures of how much we're actually going to save in this carbon reduction or something? Or how much, you know, if we're going to spend so many billions of dollars and put 100 wind turbines in the ocean and do this, what is the result going to be? And to guide us in decision making out on the ocean or wherever, on land or wherever, is there a way to come up with that?
So, we certainly are working towards that direction. Many of our modeling investments that we're looking to are trying to look at various IPCC scenarios and try to evaluate what we think the ecological response will be under each of those scenarios. We are a very long way away, I would say, at this point, given the uncertainties in science, of being able to do a definitive number like that. The first thing would be to try to have reliable predictions of the ecological response and then to quantify what the ecological, what the economic ramifications of that would be. So I think there are several steps that need to happen before that, and it wouldn't be something I would expect by spring. We're pretty early on to make that happen, but that's where we're going. That's very much where we intend to go, because we think that's the most important outputs of the investments. We'd be able to provide some high-level policy guidance as to where which CO2 levels might yield what ramifications. Does that answer your question? Sharon, did you want to comment?
Yeah, in terms of power plants, there is a lot of work outside of the ocean education field on the social cost of carbon. And so you can understand what the impacts of carbon emissions are in terms of ocean acidification, or in terms of human health, or in terms of sea level rise. And so there's a lot of different avenues to get that. Ocean acidification is probably the least developed for that, but there's a lot of other ways to do that and kind of balance that trade-off.
Right, and there have been, you know, some large-scale Earth system models that have been developed previously to work with the IPCC models that have attempted to do similar things in terms from a temperature perspective. Our challenge is to figure out a way where we can reliably incorporate a geochemical model onto those. And that's where we're working right now. Try to capitalize on the existing modeling infrastructure that's already been in place to address climate and to reconfigure those to be able to incorporate ocean acidification. And there's a fair amount of work going on at GFDL right now that's making it happen.
Other questions? Mark?
I just have a quick question for you. What do we have out of this
I'm just going to repeat the question for Jay Manning's benefit. It was about the international science meeting in Scotland recently on ocean acidification.
So we're finalizing the report on that meeting right now, which we'll have out to the community. What happens in these meetings is you find that the chemists know precisely what they want to measure. And the greatest challenge is in the ecological or biological measurements. Because as a geochemist, I can tell you, I need to know saturation state, how it changes, what the dynamics are, I know how to measure that. But when you put a bunch of biologists in the room and ask them, well, what should we be measuring from a biological perspective that will reliably give us some specific attribution of ocean acidification, it becomes much more challenging. So the conversations have been increasingly moving towards drilling down the biological monitoring requirements of these observing systems. And that's where we're at now. It's an iterative process. I don't think we came to a final conclusion at the end of the second meeting. So